We're holding in the middle of the parak. We just spoke about Shimon and Levi taking over the city of Shechem and then subduing all the surrounding nations, that they weren't going to fight Bnei Yaakov, even though Yaakov Avinu was scared that they would, but they didn't in the end. And now Yaakov Avinu is finally on his way home and he's going to go back to his parents' house, or at least to Yitzchak's house. His mother Rivka had already died. And we're going to see what happens at that point. So this is the Medrash. V'lokach Yaakov Banov Uvnei Vanov V'noshav. Yaakov Avinu took his sons and his grandsons and his wives. Now the Mefarshim speak out over here that it's not supposed to say Bnei Vanov because we don't have any proof that Yaakov Avinu had any grandchildren at this point yet. So they say that instead of saying Bnei Vanov, it should say Bnei Sov. That's what the Radal says. And also the Marzu says this. So Yaakov, his sons and his daughters and his wives came. He took them v'holach and he went l'Kiryas Arba etzel Yitzchak Aviv, to the city of Kiryas Arba, which is Hebron, where his father Yitzchak was living. Motzo sham es Esav v'es Nashav yeshvim b'hil Yitzchak. And what did Yaakov find there? He found Esav and Esav's wives living in Yitzchak Avinu's tent. I mean, he found that Esav and Esav's family was living with their father Yitzchak. By the way, it says Esav and his wives. Biblical trivia. Do you know how many wives Esav had? It's a little bit of a trick question.
350.
So the answer is 3, 4, 5, or 6. Because the Psukim and Parshas tell us that Esav had 3 wives. They give us the names of 3 different wives of Esav, and Parshas told us. And then later on in Parshas Vayishlach, when it's talking about the descendants of Esav, so it says the names of Esav's 3 wives, but it's a different 3 names. So the Shaila is how to reconcile the 3 names of Toldos with the 3 names of Vayishlach. So Rashi goes with the Mahalach that it's the same 3 people mentioned. For whatever reasons, they're mentioned with the different names. So Rashi says it's 3 wives. Rav Avram ben Arambam in his Pirush on Chumash says that no, it's the 3 wives that Parshas told us in addition to the 3 wives in Vayishlach. So Esav had a total of 6 wives. And then other Mefarshim say some were the same, some weren't the same, so it'll come out to 4 or 5. The Ramban says whatever, so you have either 3, 4, 5, or 6.
They bring the Cheshbon, why they believe one of them is the same?
Yeah, they make Cheshbon as exactly which names are the same, which ones aren't the same. So the answer is Esav had 3, 4, 5, or 6 wives. So Yaakov Avinu comes to Kiryas Arba, to where his father lived, and he sees Esav there. So what did Yaakov Avinu do? V'noto oholoi chutzoloi. And Yaakov Avinu pitched his tent outside of the tent of Yitzchak. I guess probably because he didn't want to be mischaber with Esav. He didn't want to mamish join up with Esav. But he wanted to go to his family, so he set up his family right next to Yitzchak Avinu's family. Says the Medrash, V'ro Yitzchak es Yaakov es Noshav es Banov es Bnei'sov es Kol Asher Lo'i. Yitzchak saw Yaakov and his wives and his children and his daughters and everything that he had. Interestingly, here it says wives before it says sons and daughters, and before it said sons and daughters before wives. I'm not sure why I did that. So Yitzchak saw all of this that Yaakov Avinu had, v'samach b'liboy ma'oid, and Yitzchak was very happy in his heart. V'alav akasav oimer, and about this period of Yaakov Avinu returning to the household of Yitzchak, this whole family, the pasuk says, urei vanim levanecha, shalem al Yisrael. When you see sons to your sons, shalem al Yisrael, there's peace upon Yisrael. And the Radal explains that this is the Medrash means that we saw earlier before, I think it was Perek Lamed Hey, when Yaakov Avinu was by the Sulam in Beis El, so he promised Hashem, if Hashem does everything nice for me, v'shavti v'shalom el Beis Ovi, and I return in peace to the house of my forefathers, of my father, so then I'll break karbanos for you, and this will be a Beis El Hakim, etc. Right? So this is the fulfillment of Yaakov Avinu's tefillah. Yaakov Avinu davened that he should return peacefully to his father's house, and now Yaakov Avinu has finally returned peacefully to his father's house. What? The Radal in the Hosafos makes an interesting point over here. Our Medrash over here is saying that when Yaakov Avinu came to Kiryas Arba, to where Yitzchak lived, so there he met Esav, and Esav was living over there with Yitzchak. The Shaila is, in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, it says in the Pasuk, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefonov, El Esav Achiv, Yaakov sent messengers to his brother Esav, Arzah Seir Sdei Adam, to the land of Seir, with the plain of Edom. So that sounds like when Yaakov sent the message to Esav, where was Esav? Not in Kiryas Arba, in Sdei Edom, in Arz Seir, in the land of Seir, in the Sdei Edom. Edom is a land that's sort of southwest of Eretz Yisrael. So why is it saying over here in the Medrash that you know, Yaakov bumped into Esav by Yitzchak's house? You know, Esav wasn't really living there. So the Radal says you have to say apparently the Ramban al-Chumash says this. I didn't have a chance to look at the Ramban, but the Ramban al-Chumash basically says that really Esav was living in Eretz Canaan, like the Medrash over here says that Esav was living with his father, right, with his extended family. Why did Yaakov have to send messengers to Sdei Edom? Because Esav had his own holdings over there in Edom, in Seir, in Edom. He had some sort of investments or some interests over there, and he was for some reason over there at that point. So Yaakov sent the messengers over there. But Be'etzem, Esav was living by Yitzchak Avinu in Kiryas Arba, in Chevron. Another Radal brings in Sefer Yosher, it says a slightly different chat. It says that Be'etzem, Esav lived, a similar idea, but slightly different. Be'etzem, it sounds like Esav lived in Chevron with his father's family or whatever, but he went once hunting to go to Seir, and he ended up staying in Seir for a while. So because he was staying during that while when he was in Seir, that's when Yaakov sent messengers to him. So it's a Shiloh here, exactly where did Esav live at the point? But the Pashtus is that he lived in Eretz Canaan. We'll see later on when he moved to his own land, to Har Seir, to Edom. Why? Let's do the Medrash Vayter. Rabbi Levi says, "B'shas asifosei shel Yitzchak, at the time that Yitzchak was going to die, was about to die, hiniach es miknehu ve'es kinyonoi ve'es kol ha'shaloi l'shnei vanov. He left over his flock and all his possessions and everything that he had to his two sons. L'fichach gamlu lei chesed shneim. Therefore, when Yitzchak Avinu died, so both of his sons were going l'chesed to him. Both of his sons were busied themselves in helping bury him and taking care of it. They both took care of his estate. Shneimar says in the pasuk, v'yikburo yisai Esav v'Yaakov banov. And Esav and Yaakov, his sons, buried him. So you see that both Esav and Yaakov were involved in the burying of Yitzchak. The mashmos of the mafarshim say what's the point over here? The point is that it's saying that because Yitzchak left over his property to both of his sons, to Yaakov and Esav, therefore both of them were involved in his burial. Right, but if let's say Yitzchak would have written in his will that he's giving everything to Yaakov Avinu, then Esav was such a rasha he wouldn't want to have anything to do with his father's burial. But because Yitzchak left over something for both of his sons, so they both took part of it. But of course, Yaakov Avinu, the Rabbi Yomi Israel points out that Yaakov Avinu l'chora, even if Yitzchak didn't leave anything for him, would have been metapel in his father's burial.
I have to say it.
What?
You don't really have to say that.
Why? No, it didn't happen, but like Lu Yitzuyer, that it would have happened, you know.
It's an obvious account.
Right. And the Radal points out another Nukuda that the Medrash is trying to tell us that this is different than what happened with Avram Avinu. Because by Avram Avinu sent off Bnei Keturah, and Avram Avinu disinherited Yishmael, and everything that Avram Avinu went, right? Everything that Avram Avinu owned, he gave over to Yitzchak. Kol Sherloi. Masha'en came over here by Yitzchak. Yitzchak gave over both to Yaakov and Esau. Mm-hmm. But by Avram Avinu, not. They say avort that there's a slight difference between the Bechira of Yitzchak over Yishmael and the Bechira of Yaakov over Esau, because it says in the pasuk, "Kivi Yitzchak Yikari Lachosh Zora."
Even if we don't like to hear it, but his Rivka son.
Yeah, it's different. It's a different dynamic. The difference between Yitzchak and Yishmael is not the same as the difference between Yaakov and Esau.
Yeah.
And the Sfarim said it. You know, Esau had the potential to be one of the others, and he ruined it. It's like Esau was in a different league than Yishmael. But on the other hand, Esau was much worse.
Yeah.
The averes that Esau did are much worse than the averes that Yishmael did. Just before we get to the story of exactly what happened between Yaakov and Esau when Yitzchak died, just to point out an important nekuda, an important point that the Zayis Ranan mentions over here. The Zayis Ranan, Yalkut Shemoini, Remez, Kuflam, and Ches. Now, we're discussing this story over here in the context of, you know, Yaakovin arriving in Eretz Canaan and arriving in Kiryas Arba, and they were saying that, like, when Yitzchak died, so he left over property to both Yaakov and Esau, and we'll speak about exactly how they split it up. But the next story that we're going to speak about, Be'ezra Hashem, not this week but next week, is going to be the story of the sale of Yosef and the Yidden going down to Mitzrayim, etc. Now, the MS is that Yitzchak Avinu died after the story of the sale of Yosef. Yitzchak was still alive when Yosef was sold, which is going to be year later. Right? We didn't discuss the story of Yosef yet. We didn't start that. But we're talking about Yitzchak dying. But Yitzchak dying is not happening now. It's really going to happen after Yosef is sold. Just to make a quick cheshbon, it says that Yaakov was 147 years old when he died. Yeah. He lived let's say this. Yitzchak Avinu was 180 years old when he died. Yeah, that means that, and the pasuk says that Yitzchak was 60 years old when he gave birth to Yaakov. Yeah, so 180 minus 60 is 120. So that means that Yaakov Avinu was 120 years old when Yitzchak died. Right, because Yitzchak was 60 years older than him. Right. Now, Yaakov himself only lived for 147 years. So 27 years before Yaakov Avinu died, Yitzchak died. And we know that of those 27 years, 17 years Yaakov Avinu spent in Mitzrayim. Shvasi Vayichi Yaakov, Shvasi Shana. Right? That's the beginning of Parshas Vayichi. So that means there's 10 years left. So 10 years from before, 10 years before Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim, was when Yitzchak died, right? 10 years before Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, Yitzchak was already there in Mitzrayim, because he was in Mitzrayim for 22 years before Yaakov came. And so this was like 12 years after Yitzchak died. 12 years after Yitzchak was sold. So what are we saying? Why are we bringing this story first? So the Zayis Ranan says two truths. Either you could say that Ein Mokdim U'Mocher B'Torah, and Kol Shekin in the Medrash. We're not going in order. We're not going in chronological order. First, we want to finish speaking about Yitzchak, and then we'll move on to the next stories, even though this story technically happened after the next story. That's one nekuda. The other nekuda, as Zayis Ranan says, is that really, we're not really talking about Yitzchak dying. Actually, we're talking about, because of the fact that Yitzchak became blind, and a blind man is like he's a dead man, so Yaakov and Esau felt that there was a need to already inherit his property while he was still technically alive, but because he was dead, he was considered as if he wasn't, because he was blind, it was considered as if he was dead, so that's why we discuss it over here. Okay, so what's the story between Yaakov and Esau? Omar Esau le Yaakov. Esau says to Yaakov, Nachleik kol ma she'niach lanu abba l'shnei chalokim. Let's split everything that our father left to us in two parts. Now, the MS like this. Usually, in normal circumstances, when a person has two sons and he dies, so how do you split the property? You take everything that the guy owns and you split it in three, right? And the oldest son gets two of those portions, and the other one gets one portion. That's how Be'ezim should go, right? So here, Esav is saying, no, let's take all of our father's property, split it into two, you split the property, v'ani boyer shani b'char, and I'll choose which one of the two options, because I'm the Bukhar. So Esav is doing a little shtick over here. Esav is admitting that he doesn't get double, because he, you know, he sold his firstborn rights to Yaakov. You know? So he's like admitting that he doesn't get double, but he's saying that you don't get double either. I don't get double because I sold the rights, but you don't get double because you're not really the Bukhar, you're just like, you bought the rights.
Yeah.
So Mimela, what happens is that we're just going to split it equally. And since I'm the Bukhar, because even though I sold the rights of the Bukhar, but I'm still technically the firstborn, so I deserve a certain cover that I get to choose which option. So he said, like, Yaakovinu, you split everything into two, and I'll choose which option I want. And the Mepharshim said that Yaakovinu understood that really Esav wants the whole thing, and he's sort of trying to get the whole thing in this way. So Yaakov has to figure out exactly what he's going to do. Omar Yaakov said, Arosha azeh loy milay einay min aisher. He hasn't filled his eye from riches. He wants more and more. Shnema tzlipaz gam einay lisispa aisher. Also his eye, he hasn't felt satisfied with his riches. So what is Yaakov going to do? Me asa Yaakov. What is Yaakov going to do? Chilek nishnei chalakim. He split his father's estate into two parts. Kol mashinei chaviv chilek echad. Everything that his father left over, he put in one section. It's like, option A is everything that Yitzchak Avinu owned. All his flocks, all his servants, all his everything. All his riches, etc. Option B, Ves Eretz Yisrael v'chelek echad. And the other, there's another gersa that says, Eretz Yisrael and Maras HaMachpelah v'chelek echad. Maras HaMachpelah is included in Eretz Yisrael. But,
Which goes well with the Chumash.
Why?
Because he wanted to be buried there, Esav.
Oh, yeah. So we'll get to that story, not in this parak, but in the next parak. But yeah, we'll touch on that story a little bit today. But so what is Yaakov going to do? He splits everything. He says, okay, Esav, I'll give you two options. Option A, you can have everything that Yitzchak Avinu owned except for Eretz Yisrael. Option B, you can take Eretz Yisrael, just Eretz Yisrael. So what did Esav do? Not also Esav. What did Esav do? Right? It's a good question. I don't know what to do. Should I take Eretz Yisrael or should I take everything else? Right? All the fluid estate, the money and the riches and the servants and the animals, right? Should I take all that or should I take Eretz Yisrael with the real estate? Esav didn't know what to do. So what did he do? Yishmael lamidbar lihimalech boy. He went to Yishmael in the desert to get advice from him. Shnema says the pasuk va'elech Esav el Yishmael. Esav went to Yishmael. Now the problem is a bit of a chronological problem over here, because Yishmael had already died a good many years earlier. When Yitzchak died, right? Well, you can make the cheshbon like this: when Yitzchak died, when Yishmael died, Yitzchak was 127. Yishmael died when he was 137, and Yishmael was 14 years older than Yitzchak. The kids are, it was over 50 years before Yitzchak died, Yishmael died. So Yishmael was already dead. So how could Esav go to Yishmael to ask him for advice about what to do over here, how to inherit his life?
He did it beforehand.
Oh, you're saying he did it beforehand?
It could be.
Well, if you learn like the Zayis Ranan,
when my father died, what should I do? Should I inherit everything?
You're saying he asked him already beforehand. Yeah. If you learn like the Zayis Ranan that we're talking about, where Yitzchak was really still alive and they're just splitting his property while he was alive because he was blind, and it's as if he was dead, you can hear that a little bit more. But even so, because then this whole story would be like before Yaakov Avinu even went to Haran to get married. That's mashma that this is Dafka happening now.
Yeah, it should be when.
Yeah.
Pretended to be
Esau. Right. Omar Yishmael Akoponim, so it says he went to Yishmael. There's another Gersa in the Higger edition of Pirkei Deblezer, which is from Ksav Yad. It says he went to Binoy Shel Yishmael, to Yishmael's son. And that's more or less Sefer Yasha also says he went to Nevoyos Ben Yishmael, who was his brother in law. The Radal says it should say Bnei Yishmael.
Okay,
so the idea is that he didn't literally go to Yishmael, he went to a relative of his, a son of Yishmael or something like that.
The chronological problem.
Yeah.
If there are different versions, you say that Dafka at this point is been told differently.
Right. Okay, so what did he say? I'm Yishmael, Esav. Yishmael said to Esav like this: the Amorites and the Canaanites are then in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Why there were a bunch of nations there. The Radal says, why does it say Amorites and Canaanites? So the Canaanites, because, you know, that's like the Spitz, the land of Canaan, you know, they're called Canaanim. So the general term is Canaanites, so we call them Canaanites, right? And then Amorites, the Radal says, the Amorites are like the strongest people there. They were the most fearsome. So Yishmael is mentioning both Amori and Canaanite, and not necessarily everyone else. The Amorites and the Canaanites are living in land now. And Yaakov, your brother, is confident that he's going to inherit the land. Meaning, I don't really think it's going to happen anyways that you're going to get the land. Either Radal says, either because they didn't believe in the promise from Hashem, maybe he didn't even believe in Hashem, or he didn't believe in the promise from Hashem, or the word is that Yishmael was assuming that maybe Yaakov is going to do some sort of avera and he'll lose getting this Eretz Yisrael anyways. So Yishmael tells Esav,
look, I'm just saying that maybe we have two new players to negotiate with, and then we go and negotiate with him. Okay, you can negotiate with them, to take Eretz Yisrael from Yaakov's hands.
I hear it. It sounds like from the Medrash that Yishmael is telling, the sons of Yishmael are telling Esav, look, we're not so confident that Yaakov's actually going to get Eretz Yisrael anyways. This whole Eretz Yisrael thing is not really realistic. So the our advice to you is, Ella, rather, what should you do? Tol mashenich avicha, take whatever else your father left for you. Ve'en le'Yaakovin ma'uma, and Yaakovin won't get anything. You take everything else, leave Eretz Yisrael to Yaakovin, and he won't even get Eretz Yisrael for the reasons we said before, that they didn't believe in it or whatever. And Esav is going to follow that advice. Esav took whatever his father had left. And Eretz Yisrael and Maratz Bachpelo, he left over for Yaakov Avinu. And they wrote an eternal document between them, attesting to the fact that Esav is taking everything for himself and leaving Eretz Yisrael and Maratz Bachpelo for Yaakov Avinu. And this document that we just mentioned is going to be important in the next parak, in the story of when they were burying Yaakov, you know, and Esav came along and tried to stop the burial. But that's what happened here. But Omar Yaakov le Esav. So that was the deal, right? So now Yaakov gets Eretz Yisrael and Esav gets everything else. Omar Yaakov le Esav. Yaakov said to Esav, Leich me Eretz Achuzasi me Eretz Canaan. Get out of my heritage land. Get out of Eretz Canaan, because we have this document and it belongs to me now, so now you have to get out. So Esav took his wives and everything that he had and he went elsewhere. And Esav went to land, this isn't even the land, Esav went to land because of his brother Yaakov. And this is a reference to the fact that Esav left Eretz Canaan and went to a different place and settled over there to Har Seir, where he settled with the Chari over there and mingled with the Chari, and then he took over. That's Har Seir or Stay Adaim. That became the land of Esav over there. Now there's an interesting medrash. Actually, it's like a whole bevy of like midrashim and commentaries that talk about this. There's an interesting medrash called Medrash Yilamdenu on this pasuk of Ve'yelech el Eretz Mepnei Yaakov Ochiv, and he brings down in Medrash Yilamdenu that pasuk is talking about something else. Esav had a grandson named Tzfoi. This guy Tzfoi was the son of Eliphaz, the son of Esav, and Tzfoi went off to a place called Italy, and he conquered a city called Rome, and he was over there, he was a king in Rome, and he was a very successful general in battles and whatever. And at some point he was fighting the aboriginal Rome, Italians, who were probably from Bnei Yefes. We'll have to ask Rabbi Felder about that. They were probably Bnei Yefes, and this guy Tzfoi actually lost in war. So there was like a little outpost of Esav's descendants over there in Rome, and this guy Tzfoi was their general, their king or whatever, and he lost the war and he got killed. And it says in the Medrash that Esav went there to Rome to go be Menachem Avol, the family of Tzfoi, and that's what it means, Vayelech el Eretz, that Esav went to the land. It means that he went to Rome to go be Menachem Avol for his grandson who got killed. That's one version of this Medrash. There's a few different, it's brought down in a few different ways, but the Rekech says a slightly different thing about this guy Tzfoy. That later was, as I mentioned before, we'll speak in the next parak about the, when they were going to bury Yaakov Avinu. So Esav came along and said, "No, you know, I own the rights. Yaakov Avinu shouldn't be buried here in Ras Machpelah." So there's the Rekech says that this guy Tzfoy, the grandson of Esav, he was over there involved in that scuffle, in that fight, and Yosef, who was, you know, the king of Mitzrayim at that point, or at least the viceroy of Mitzrayim, came and captured Tzfoy and brought him back to Mitzrayim. And the Rekech says that afterwards, when Yosef HaTzadik died, and he was no longer, the Jews were no longer sort of controlling Mitzrayim, so it's like, was released from prison, I guess it was like, you know, some sort of like political prisoner or something, and he ran away, and he went to Rome, and he captured Rome, and that's how Bnei Esav have their stronghold in Rome. That's another Medrash. There's other sources also.
It's very strange.
Yosifun, Yosifun.
Just said that Esav himself
went to Edom. To Edom, yeah. which is southwest of Eretz Yisrael, not Rome.
Not Rome.
Yosifun.
He just said that he went there to Nachem the family.
Yeah.
So how come? How did it happen before Yosef was?
No, okay, the Midrashim don't necessarily jive with each other. Because they're two different Midrashim about exactly what happened with this guy Tzfoy in Rome. There's a Yosifun, which was a sefer based on Josephus. He says that Rome was started in the time of David HaMelech. Right, so there's a Gemara about it. The Gemara says, in Shabbos Taf Nun Vav, the Gemara says that on the day that Shlomo HaMelech married the daughter of Paro, so Gavriel HaMalach came and he took a stick and he stuck it in the sea, and from that stick grew out Italia Shel Yavon, Italy of, you know, Greek Italy, wherever, which became Rome.
There's a reference to this Medrash in Brochus, maybe?
It could be.
There's a reference to the Gemara in Shabbos.
It could be.
I remember that.
And there's a Sifri that says that it was when Yeravam ben Avat put up these idols. That's when Rome started. There's other sources that say it was in the time of Yosam Melech Yehuda, Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda. There are different sources of exactly when Rome was originally built. And I have a way of answering up all these different sources. There's a famous expression we say in English: Rome wasn't built in a day. So each of these Midrashim are talking about like different stages in the building up of the city, something like that. There's another Nakuda. The Rebbe Reb Heschel in Chanukah Satara, Parshas told us. So in Parshas told us when Yitzhak Avin is giving a bracha to Esav, so it said, he said to him, Yishmane Oretz Yem Eishavecha, from the fattest of the land, that should be your place of dwelling. And Rashi says, what's the fattest of the land should be the place of your dwelling? Zu Italia Shel Yavon. That's referring to Italy. The question is like, why Italy of like all places in the world? Like, you know, Esav is, you know, they're pretty dominant in a lot of different places in the world. Why did Rashi specifically say in Italy? What's this idea of Italy?
Nice weather.
What?
Nice weather.
Nice weather. Actually, I have a friend who's going to Italy tomorrow, in 2 days. He's really going to Maricopa. He's stopping over because he wants to go eat in one of the restaurants in Rome. What are those type of guys?
I'll tell you something here.
Off the record.
Off the record. Tell us about the restaurants in Rome.
Oh, off the record.
The kosher ones.
Oh.
The good stuff.
Anyways, so I was once in a Milchig Italian restaurant in Yerushalayim. And I'm like looking at the menu and I'm like, I don't know what any of this stuff is. Fettuccino, fettuccine, what do you call like noodles with like cheese and tomato sauce? Like, oh, we don't have a name for that, but we could do it for you. Al Capone, so why does Rashi say that this...
Pomodori, formaggio, fettuccine.
Yeah, I don't know. Mario and Luigi. And
pomodoro, formaggio.
So why does Rashi say that Mishmani Oretz Yehem HaShabach is talking about Italy? What's stop at the point of Italy? So the Chanukah Soteria, Rebbe Heschel, and the end of Parshas told us there's a word like this. This is because previously Yitzchak had already given a bracha to Yaakov Avinu. He said, Hashem should give you from the dew of the heavens and from the fat of the land. So Yaakov Avinu already gets the fat of the land. He gets all the best of the land, right? So then how could there be any room for a bracha to give over to Esav? Ha-bracha achas yeshlecha? Is there only one bracha that you could give me? And then Yitzchak all of a sudden pulls out another bracha and gives it to Esav. But you already gave over all the best lands to Yaakov, you know. So how can you give it over to Esav? Says the Rebbe of Heschel, the bracha that was going to Yaakov Avinu was only going onto the lands that had already existed at that time in history. So then, when Yitzchak was giving the bracha to Esav, saying, I'm going to give you a bracha that wasn't included in the bracha that went to Yaakov Avinu. I'm going to give you Italia shel Yavon, to Italy. Because that didn't exist yet. Because the Gemara in Shabbos said that when did Italy start? When the Malach Gavriel stuck a stick in the ocean, when Shlomo Malach married the daughter of Parah, like I just mentioned before, that's when Italy grew. So the land itself didn't exist, so it wasn't included in the original bracha to Yaakov, so it could be included into the new bracha of Esav. Yeah, a little bit weiter. Fine. So basically the point is that Esav leaves Eretz Canaan and he goes to elsewhere, to Edom, maybe to the land of Edom. Perhaps Esav made also a colony in Rome. And in the reward, as a reward for the fact that Esav had cleared out all his vessels, meaning all of his belongings from Eretz Canaan, because of his brother Yaakov, he left everything and went out and left it all over to Yaakov. Now suddenly, Mea Medinais Miseir V'Ad Magdil. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Esav 100 provinces from Seir until Magdil. What's Magdil? Shneva, it says in the Pasuk, Aluf Magdil, Aluf Iram. What's Magdil? Ze Roimi. Magdil is Roimi, which is Rome. Right? And Rashi says, in Chumash also, Magdil is Rome. Also, Targum Anderson also says it over there. Magdil is Rome. I think Targum Anderson says it. So Yaakov Avinu gave him Rome. Hashem gave to Esav all these brachas because he was so what's the word I'm looking for? Cooperative with Yaakov Avinu. So he got these brachas. He got these 100 provinces, and he got Rome. There's an interesting tshuva that I saw a while ago. See, it says in the pasuk Aluf Magdil, right? And we say Magdil is Rome. So that would imply, at least in that you might say that what that means is that at the time that the Torah was written, when Hashem gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, so Magdil, meaning Rome, already existed. Which we said earlier was a shaila, and when exactly Rome was built, and Rome wasn't built in a day or whatever. But it sounds like Magdil already existed in the time that the Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So if that's true, comes along the Shalos of Tshuva's Hisarus Tshuva from the grandson of the Chassam Sefer, the son of the Chassam Sefer. The Shalos of Tshuva's Hisarus Tshuva, he wants to say a Chiddush, and we know that Magdil, why is Magdil Rome? The Targum Yenison says because it has a wall around it, and a Migdal, right? A wall and a tower, so that's Rome, right? So if Rome was called Magdil because it had a wall and a tower, even in the time of the Torah, that would imply that Rome is a city that's Mukaf Chayma Mimais Yeshua Ben Nun. That it's a walled city from the times of Joshua, which would give it a halachic status of keeping Shushan Purim, which should keep the 15th of Adar, not the 14th of Adar in Rome. So that's what the Shaila Shemus and Sirius Chu wants to say, that Rome should keep the 15th day of Adar.
Keep Shushan Purim. The same place. We don't
know if that's Rome has been inhabited continuously. But that's what it's a huge
Then it says when?
What?
We don't know.
It's a huge
slightly before, slightly after Yeshua Binan. It's not Chaya.
Yeah, you're right. Lamai says it's a huge Kiddush. There's a similar Kiddush
as that. According to the Purim Halachos, it would just say, you better keep with the rest of the world instead of trying to.
No, so that's also true. In the case of a suffix, if it's Mukav Chorima, yeah. So there's a Ran that says that you keep a 14th, not the 15th. So the best, if you could, even if you could say best is a suffix, you'll still do 14th. Yeah,
it happens
with Tiberius. Yeah, that's there's a Chiddush. There's a similar Chiddush that the Chayy Adam writes that Prague also should keep 2 days with suffix. A similar idea, because Prague maybe is a Mukav Chayma because it's an ancient city, something like that.
Today's
Purim, yeah. At the time when I first saw this Sisteria's Tshuva, so I emailed a bunch of Chabad rabbis. I could only find Chabad rabbis in Rome. I emailed 3 Chabad rabbis in Rome, and they all said they never heard of such a thing. Of course, Rome keeps Purim on the 14th day of Adar. One of the rabbis wrote me that the earliest wall that they found, that the archaeologists found of Rome, is dates to about 600 years after Yeshua ben Nun. The earliest wall.
Really?
That the archaeologists found.
It's already very good.
600 years after Yeshua ben Nun.
I know, but it's already very good. In look, for the Medrash.
For the Medrash, it's good. That's like Mamish, like the time of like Shlomo Melech.
Forget about it. This is incredible.
Why?
What's it called? We don't approve. The Medrash is a better proof than everything else.
Than what?
I'm just saying, like, it's a good that they found something that's so ancient, like, that it was really, okay.
Okay, it's like we knew that Rome was old.
Because what happens, like, it's still, there's a suffix if Asa was there exactly, or,
yeah,
you know, somewhere else, but at least it was, you know, the proof that it was very ancient.
Yes. Yeah. And that's just when there was a wall. Apparently, beforehand, Rome prided itself on being a city without a wall, that they didn't need a wall to protect themselves because they were so strong. Which sounds so like asymptotic.
Look, 600 years after Yeshua ben Nun.
Berach Shlomo Melech.
Yeah.
Berach Shlomo Melech.
Yeah, we're talking about like roughly 800 years before, 800 years.
Before?
Yeah, 800 years before it was the time of Asa.
Yeah. About. Okay. It's an interesting thing. I had this emails with correspondence back in 2012 with these rabbis in Rome. Okay. Later. Oz, we'll finish off a few more lines and we'll stop here. Oz Yoshev Yaakov Petach v'Sha'anan. Then Yaakovinu settled confidently v'Sha'anan and tranquil be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. Uve'eretz Meladatoi, in the land of his birth. Uve'eretz Migurei Oviv, and in the land where his parent father had lived. Shneeretz is the pasuk. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Migurei Oviv. Yaakov lived in the land where his father had lived. Right. So like, this is like sort of like the opposite of Avraham Avinu. It says Lech lecha me'aretzcha mimoladetcha mibeis avicha, and here it's Yaakov is going back to where his father lived, to the place where he was born, etc. So like the opposite of Avram leaving Eretz Yisrael, and we have Yaakovinu coming and Mamish settling down in Eretz Yisrael. And we know this is like the opening words of Parshas Vayeshev now. The Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Migurei Oviv, and we know what Rashi says over there in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. Pikesh Tzadikim Leisha B'Shalva Kof Tzaleim Tzoreis. The tzaddikim, the righteous people, they want to sit in tranquility and, you know, and enjoy their Olam Hazeh and not have to deal with all kinds of distressing issues and whatever, but alas, that is what happens in this world, that Hashem brings upon, you know, calamity after calamity. And even though Yaakov is sitting here and he's settled and he came to Israel, and that's like mamish, like the Spitz form life, you know, the Spitz life, the Spitz existence, but, you know, the unfortunate stories don't stop, and we're gonna see next week the next story of Yosef being sold and all the other tzaras that Yaakov had to go through towards the end of his life. So tune in next time. Same bat time, same bat channel.